Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today's Monday, January 13th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our brand new, newly redesigned website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I apologize about the delay getting started. If you are listening live, I had connectivity problems. I've got all the backups were jammed, and I don't know if it was a Blog Talk Radio issue out of New York or if it was an internet connectivity problem here, if it was a bandwidth problem, whatever the heck it was. I apologize about the delay. It's going to be a little bit shorter show today. We've got to wrap up just a little bit before 1. But we've got a great episode today of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. He's got some great topics, really some of the more common diseases we're hearing about going around the country right now in your backyard. And so we're going to get right to Peter Brown. Let's go ahead and give him a Chicken Whisperer welcome. All right, let's see if this switchboard will cooperate. Yeah, there we go. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Andy, how's it going?
It was going pretty good until about 13 minutes ago, and I had no way of trying to open the chat room or open the switchboard or get the thing going or go live, or the thing just kept spinning and spinning, and I tried the local internet, I tried my neighbors, I tried the one I've got, and it just sit and spin. So anyway, we finally apparently got a signal, and nonetheless, you are here live, I'm live, and we've got about 45 minutes to educate ourselves more about our backyard poultry, and that's what it's all about. So I'm going to turn it over to you, my friend.
Yeah, last episode we talked about, or I mentioned, that I had seen last year a study that was done relating to backyard poultry and stuff, and I was a little bit remiss, and I thought this, and it may have been another one that I saw somewhere along the line at one of the meetings I've gone to, that was for the blood testing and stuff that might have been done at a sale barn or something like that. This particular one that I'm talking about was, that we're going to discuss today, has to do with different poultry-related diagnostic laboratories at the state level in multiple states across the country, and who reported back into this particular organization. I believe this study ran from around 2010 to 2012. Some of them gave information that was available from 2011 through 2012 and so on. But what it does for everybody is a huge eye-opener from my perspective, at least. Through the USDA, Andy, yourself, you talk about, biosecurity and the USDA talks about, overall bird health and so on. And personally, I don't think a whole lot gets done about it. I think that that particular program is a feel-good approach that lets everybody know that we're doing something, but how effective the program is at the end of the day, I really question that. And I think that the approach that is often given by diagnostic laboratories at the state level, the Department of Agriculture and that kind of thing, creates a hostile environment for the backyard small flock holder, if you will. We generally talk about this type of thing. We're looking at maybe even small commercial flocks, and those tend to be birds, 500 birds total or less. Bear in mind as well that the Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, and so on, they look at this as a chicken is a chicken is a chicken. It doesn't matter whether you're going to eat the chicken, show the chicken, just look at the chicken, let it run around a backyard, let it sleep in your bed with you, let it eat a table with you. They consider all chickens as chicken. And they, when they formulate, medication, drug policy, and so on and so forth, it's all geared to a one-chicken model rather than a group of people who may be showing birds or a group of people who may have them for pleasure, so on and so forth. or even those that are just possibly producing eggs for selling eggs or selling hatching eggs for chick purposes. So they kind of look at it as one collective group rather than to break this out as an individual thing. But a couple of things struck me very deeply in this survey thing, and I think you're going to see more of it to come after we start to go through some of the things here that were found. And I truly believe that this particular report will bring on at some point in time, and I hope I'm wrong, because I don't like the approach that the governmental agencies take now and any more restrictions on poultry. To me, from my perspective, would be just counterproductive. I don't think it would be very, very helpful to the backyard enthusiast at this point. But so this study was done, and part of the reason that I say that is that they make note of the fact that the backyard small flock holder numbers are rising. They project a number of reasons why that may be, carbon footprint, organic raising, so on and so forth. And they make note of some of the larger cities. As a matter of fact, and I always tell you guys when I'm reading to you from someone, read a few things from time to time today from this actual report. In other words, backyard farming, and this is their interpretation, not mine, so don't throw rocks at me. Started as an underground activity. That's what they call it. Okay, and now they're saying that many cities are changing their laws and so on and so forth. So it says nowadays in cities such as Madison, Wisconsin, Fort Collins, Colorado, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, residents have campaigned to change the laws to allow them to keep a small number of laying hens. And we're seeing this more increasingly now. Joined these early pioneers to make their laws favorable for backyard chicken enthusiasts. In cities such as Seattle, Portland, Los Angeles, San Francisco, raising hens has always been legal, so the trend has expanded quite considerably in those locations. This report, sponsored by basically the Department of Agriculture through the National Animal Health Monitoring System. Can't get that out. NAHMS is the acronym for that. So they conducted this study, and it involved flocks of birds from across the country, various locations of diagnostic laboratories at the state level that were submitting necropsy reports, blood test reports, and so on, for the gathering of this particular information to give them a handle on what was found. Now, to stop just for a minute and look at what Andy, you do, and I do, our emphasis has always been on trying to make people, not make people, but give people the information to make their flocks healthier. What they do with the information once they get it is not my concern. We've always tried to and continue to strive here to put out good, solid information that's backed up by experience and science, or combination of things that people can use and can implement on their farms or their small flocks and so on. But I see this survey being used down the road. And I may be wrong. I'm just reading it from my perspective. That I see regulations down the road possibly getting tightened up quite considerably, because from what I can see here, even though these were small amounts of, in other words, this was not testing that was testing hundreds of thousands of birds, as one might think, across the country, and I'll go over it in a moment with how many submissions were from the majority of the states that were reporting. But that being said, it's a tool for the implementation of tighter restrictions, and I fear that after reading through this whole thing.
Peter, read that part again where it said underground establishment, or what? Read that sentence again.
Hang on a second here. Let me It says many cities have laws prohibiting the production of livestock in residential areas, and backyard farming started as an underground activity. And then
okay, I think that whoever wrote that needs a history lesson.
Yeah, you think?
yeah, because I'm like, really? In 1912, in major cities all around the country, when people had a few chickens in their backyard and a goat maybe for milk, I don't think, 1800s, 1700s, the 1600s, before America was America, it was underground. No, I don't think so.
Well,
I
think that you're absolutely right. I think that what happens with a lot of these things is that this is like somebody sitting in an office not knowing the ins and outs of something and then telling you how to do your job. I mean, it's done all the time. People at the top who live in the little glass buildings and formulate policy and everything else have never gone out to see. It's kind of like undercover boss, okay? How many times I've seen that a few times, and you see these guys go out and they actually find out what the people who they have made, company policies for actually have to do. And they come back and they change a whole lot of things because they can't do it themselves, And so I think that kind of an analogy applies here. These folks have no clue. They're not out in this world. They don't travel in it like you and I do. They don't have a close association with either clientele or friends or folks who just say hi, and now and then about birds that they raise and so on. So. Yeah, I agree with you. They need a good history lesson.
Someone in the chat room had a really good point, and they said, all you have to do is go and look, and we posted them before, all the posters from, the World War II era about, do your part, have backyard chickens. All those pro-Victory Garden and even pro-chicken posters we've seen in the 40s. And when it was really, let's just call it what it was. It was mainstream way back when. And the reason why I think it disappeared or became less common was
right.
Because Sally and Harry had opened up their mom and pop market on the corner. And then and Sally or Jane down the road says, "Ooh, I can get a complete chicken for supper tonight for 79 cents. Why should I keep these chickens in my backyard and feed them and take care of them if I can go down to Sally's and get one for 69 cents already plucked and cleaned and ready to put in my pot?" And
right.
I think at that point, a lot of the backyard chickens started to disappear because they could buy them at the corner. Now the chickens on the corner came from the farm, 30 miles away. And so there weren't the Tysons and the Purdues and things back when. And so I think that was the beginning of the end of backyard chickens before it kind of reared its popularity again, a decade ago, as people wanted to get back to that time. So that's my two cents worth. So
yeah,
calling
I think one of the reasons that it went away is that it did become cheaper with the advent of the modern-day broiler. Even a lot of the breeds that were dual-purpose breeds have pretty much gone by the boards. The Buckeye, the Delaware, these multi-purpose birds that, laid a lot of eggs and then were good in the soup pot. While there are people that still breed them and show them and that kind of thing, I'm talking about, for the type of production that they were used for back then. That's all gone by the boards. They've become almost an endangered species. They're on the list at the National Livestock Conservancy's list of animals that are either endangered or whatever. But those things, I think, went away as moms went to work. Something that was done all the time, and then moms went to work, and it was easier to get chickens at the market. Who was going to take care of them? Dad was working, mom was working, kids in school. All of those things played into the demise of these particular breeds because of the advent of the modern-day broiler. And, there isn't any question in my mind that that's how all of that stuff starts. The, every great society has its problems or has had its problems, and we continue to have ours, many self-inflicted. As a country becomes more affluent and its constituents of the country make more money and everything else, then the goods that that country produces become more expensive, and then they price themselves out of the market for a particular industry. And we've done that here many, many times and continue to do so. And other countries, developing countries and somewhat less developed, maybe somewhat than here, Colombia comes to mind. I was listening to a program not too long ago here, about a week or so ago, about them. They used to be big in making all kinds of shirts and garments and so on and so forth. And as of beginning of February of this year, they will no longer make any because they can be made 30% cheaper somewhere else. And it all has to do with their economy. They're more affluent now than they were before. They're making more money. The hourly wage is higher and so on and so forth. And so all of these things play into the demise of these particular breeds and so on. And it's coming back now because people want to take more control, those that can. That's what I think. People who want to eat healthier, certainly not going to raise it any cheaper than you could buy it at the supermarket. But it may, in your mind, certainly it'll be fresher. It'll be at least you'll know what went into it, and so on and so forth. I applaud all of that stuff for those that are able to do it. But it is a statement where certainly somebody needs a little bit of an education. But don't forget, all this comes out of academia. People that live in their little glass houses and stuff, for the most part, not all of them. Some of them do. I don't think they did enough introductory research on that. But so they originally did one of these studies back in 2010, and it only and I don't have access to the results of that one. I don't think. But neither here nor there, they only did a small study in four U.S. cities, and now they've decided that, and I like this statement. Some of the statements, just like that one that triggered your response, Andy, these are the types of things that trigger my response, okay? The study was a good start, but there is still much that is unknown, operative word, unknown, about urban and suburban backyard flocks in terms of their numbers, locations, and disease status, okay? And it goes on to say, these flocks represent a unique challenge for poultry disease diagnosticians and the poultry industry in terms of disease control and management. So the information that we're going to be talking about here in just a moment came from a total of 12 state university diagnostic laboratories covering a wide geographic region. And California participated in a different way. They have a more comprehensive way of summarizing their material, so that was kind of left out of a particular survey and is an add-on. But, going back to what you and I do, the encouragement of keeping a healthy flock, and some of this information here will cut to what I've always tried to say, concerning vaccination, concerning, controlling internal parasites, external parasites, and all of the things that we go through and talk about, on this show. It was a little bit of an eye-opener for me because I too felt in many cases that backyard flocks were a little bit healthier than most, and I think that the results here are going to show you that that's not quite the case. And some of these surveys that were done were the diagnoses were done through photos that were sent in by the clientele because of the cost of doing the necropsy and or the lab work and stuff, and I still run into that all the time, and it is costly, especially with the newer types of diagnostic tools, the PCR, the polymerase chain reaction tests and stuff, very, very expensive. You're looking at a minimum most places of $75 a whack. So, if you're looking to do every bird on your place, you have to have a pretty deep pocketbook. But, and I fault the government for not offering these things to the backyard flock holders, either free or at a much reduced cost, because if you want people to participate in these things, you know, you need to extend the straw and let them drink the wine rather than putting acid in their face. And I feel lots of times that's what they do with these things. You know, the proverbial words, oh, put the flock down, that's it's really, really easy to say. But that rarely happens when a flock of commercial birds gets sick with Newcastle or bronchitis or LT or E. coli infection or air sac disease or any of those things. They work through it, medication made out of it, and talk at the bird. Nobody comes in and tells them to put them all down, you know, not unless it's something exotic like even influenza or exotic Newcastle or something like that. So it's an interesting thing, and I'll read through this. These people that responded to this were asked to provide a number of diseases that they observed or diagnosed in backyard chickens, turkeys, game birds, ducks, and other species. And that, you know, some of them had more than one disease, and then there was a reluctance on the owners to pay for diagnostic services. And part of the reason for that is the cost of it. You know, for instance, here, We are lucky, and I think it has to do a lot with the commercial poultry industry being right here in our backyard, so to speak. But to my knowledge here, the basic sounding test that you would need done, you brought a bird in, it died, that would be done free. If you want to test every bird in the flock, you're going to pay for it. So I think that is a good olive branch to put out there to the backyard enthusiast, small flock holder, you know, small commercial flock holder, as a methodology to be helpful, rather than you know, giving us that distasteful word, put the flock down. So this is something that they ran into. I run into it all the time. You know, when we try to get a better diagnosis on something, we may have a very good hunch as to what's going on. But when we really look to get a definitive answer, most people don't want to pay for it, and I understand that. Okay. So out of this information that was gathered, and I was going to read this here right to you off their chart, the state of Pennsylvania, with two laboratories participating, had the largest number of diseases recorded, which was 189, and this was in supposedly just in the backyard small flock holder situation. Some of this wouldn't surprise me in Pennsylvania, and I'll give you an example. I think we spoke about this before, especially when we talked about LT, which is laryngotracheitis. They require, if you're going to show birds in the state of Pennsylvania, that you vaccinate. But they do not mandate, nor do they suggest in any way, shape, or form, unless it's changed recently. Okay, I'm speaking from my past experience, but it may have changed. I heard some wind about the possibility that it may have changed. But they don't tell you that you shouldn't use the chick embryo LT vaccine, which is like playing with fire. So it wouldn't surprise me that people who have used that vaccine in that state are just spreading it everywhere. We've seen it many, many times where the vaccine strain from a CEO-type vaccine, which means it's made from chick embryos versus a tissue culture, which is much, much more mild, and there is at least one of them on the market that has made claims for the last 40 years that it doesn't spread. And I even have some evidence maybe of that within our own flock, because I had some blood testing done on some birds here recently for a small issue. And no LT was picked up, although the birds many years ago had been vaccinated, okay? And they were vaccinated with the tissue culture, a non-spreading vaccine. So I could see possibly Pennsylvania having maybe more problems there based on that. And that's just a hunch on my part. I have no idea, you know, what all of the disease problems they saw were, okay? New Jersey, which is interesting because New Jersey is not a big commercial poultry state by any stretch. Pennsylvania, by far, much, much larger poultry-wise on the commercial side. They were second at 146. Here's an interesting one. Colorado at 71, Missouri at 47, South Carolina at 39, New York at 38, rounding out the top six. Okay. Other states that participated in this were Arkansas. They had 30. Delaware here were right up the street here, 4 miles here. You're over the Delaware line. They had 27, and that's interesting because of the fact that we have a huge poultry population here. The area is very hot for LT on the commercial side, and to see only 27. And of course, this doesn't mean that everybody that has a backyard flock has brought their birds in. This is stuff that was submitted, you know, to them. And Texas next with 24, Michigan with 10, North Carolina with 7. Now, an interesting analogy that I can draw from North Carolina to Pennsylvania, and I may be all wet on it, don't know, but it comes to my mind. North Carolina will not allow you legally to vaccinate with an LT vaccine of any shape, form, or description without the state okay. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen, doesn't mean people, you know, don't buy the vaccine at a show somewhere, bring it home, vaccinate, but they will not let you do it. They will not let you use a mycoplasma vaccine, killed or otherwise, without state permission. Yeah, it's a long form. I had to do it for somebody in South Carolina here not too long ago, the same thing. And then Maine came in with 6. Maine doesn't have the poultry population that once had, but still has a fair amount of layers there. And I have no idea what their small flock holder situation is there. I do know some folks from Maine that show birds and that kind of thing. It's an interesting thing. And it says here, let me see, it says, some states such as Colorado also sent in parallel information on cases diagnosed visually without any diagnostic testing. This was a total of 434 cases, and 69% of those were infestations with external parasites in chickens and turkeys. Makes you wonder a little bit. And certainly those people haven't gotten a bucket out and sitting in the yard watching things for by any stretch of the imagination. So, respiratory diseases were 16% of the total, followed by avian tumors, which were more than likely lymphoid leucosis or Merrick's type, rounding it out at about 9%. So you can see just from this beginning of this stuff, there is a problem there. And this is only from a handful. Additional information here that we have. I think it's important, you know, people might be bored to death with this stuff. I think it's important to understand why we, and I say we, myself and other people who do what I do or have ideas about what I do, Andy yourself, the Department of Agriculture and your local diagnostician, your 4-H leader, maybe even in some places there are some pretty good, decent people run some of these state poultry laboratories who are somewhat sympathetic to the backyard crowd and will actually give you some good information on how to do things, that, you know, there are some serious problems here. And I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon. And I'm not suggesting in any way, shape, or form that everybody run out tomorrow and vaccinate. Now, vaccination needs to be done on a flock-by-flock basis based on a lot of different parameters. But, you know, some of this stuff here is a little bit scary. Anyway, the survey results, chickens, as we expected, are by far the most common poultry species kept by backyard enthusiasts, and they accounted for over 62% of all of the 623 lab-diagnosed diseases, followed by game birds at 15%, as seen in this table below. So salmonella in chickens still continues to be a low amount in the small flock holder, turkeys too, but you see, here's another thing. Salmonella pylorum is in the salmonella family. It is a disease that still is found fairly often in wild game birds. And in this survey, there were 11 cases in game birds that were submitted that had salmonella. Now, it doesn't differentiate the particular type, but my guess would be salmonella pylorum. This is one of the reasons why we still have NPIP program for pylorum still in place. And, you know, some people think it's to protect the commercial poultry industry. Well, yes, on one hand it is, obviously. I mean, nobody would want to see any of the, well, there are some people, I guess, but the average person with a functioning brain wouldn't want to see the commercial poultry industry throughout the country and elsewhere taken down by a simple disease that can be controlled. Looking to control this thing, and that's what the NPIP program originally started out to be. You know, they cover a few more diseases now than they have in the past, mycoplasma and avian influenza and stuff like that, but still a good program, but not just totally in place just for the commercial poultry industry. E. coli infections complicate mycoplasma and make up between the Mycoplasma gallisepticum and the E. coli itself make up what we know as chronic respiratory disease, or can make up an infection known as air sac disease all by itself, or you can have intestinal E. coli. In chickens, the E. coli was fairly high. There were 39 cases there, 2 in turkeys, 13 in game birds, and 1 in a duck, a total of 58 cases there. Respiratory disease, bacterial type, 25 in chickens, 11 in turkeys, 4 in game birds, 2 in ducks. Of the viral variety, 35 in chickens, 6 in turkeys, 4 in game birds. This one here should set everybody back just a little bit. There were 49 cases of reported mycoplasma in these backyard flocks for poultry, 5 for turkeys, 4 for game birds, 1 for ducks, and 41 in other species, totaling 100 cases total. That's pretty big. That's pretty big. Because if you take all of the salmonella and the E. coli together, they don't come to 100, you see. But if you take the mycoplasma alone, it came to 100 cases. That's pretty huge when you start looking at it overall. Okay. Avian tumors, you're looking at Marek's disease virus in chickens. There were 39 cases, and there were lymphoid leucosis virus. There were 5, and other types of avian tumors, which could have been just about anything. There's osteopetrosis, which is like a bone cancer thing for chickens, and so on. So you had a total of about, let me see, 39, 44, almost 60 cases of avian tumors. You have to start looking at some of these things, and you look at it and say, okay, Marek's, most of that can be prevented if we would vaccinate, you know. And, I fight that thing all the time with people, not wanting to vaccinate. I only have a small bunch of birds, this, that, and the other thing. I think it starts to show you that this is a widespread type of a situation, and, people need to look at it and adjust their programs accordingly. Parasites, internal parasites were by far across the board. Everybody had them, but mostly in chickens. There were 104 in chickens, 21 in turkeys, 49 in game birds. And you would expect a little bit more in the game birds and some of the chickens for the internal parasites, especially small flock holders, free-ranging and stuff, tend to have a little bit more of a worm problem. 5 were in ducks, 16 were other species for a total of 195. That's pretty big. Okay. If you were looking at 623 overall diagnosed cases, a third of them had internal parasites. So that's huge in itself. External parasites, lice and mites, chickens 44, turkeys 2, game birds 2, for a total there of 48, not nearly as bad as the internal parasites. And I don't know why that would be. People, maybe relying on the internal parasites for the diatomaceous earth to do all the work or whatever. I don't know. Can't speak to it. This is just stuff that was reported on these laboratory diagnosis things. Now, I think this one's interesting. There were 23 total cases across the board, most being in chickens, 14, where nutritional diseases were the cause of the mortality or the problem that the bird was presented for the necropsy for. While that may seem small. I think it's huge, actually, from my perspective. Nutritional problems really shouldn't crop up these days. And I don't know where that comes from, the disease parameters, the internal parasites, the external parasites, or something else, the underfeeding of feed, feeding too much scratch, feeding too many treats, as we've discussed numerous times. And this one strikes me a little funny because we're seeing more and more of it, fungal diseases. They don't break it out into to different ones, but I have been seeing over the last couple of years an increase in favus, which is a fungal disease that birds get, and humans can get it as well. There were 13 cases of fungal disease in chickens, 3 in turkeys, 4 in game birds, and 1 in other species, for a total of 21. Other parasitic diseases, there were a total of 18, 10 of them being in chickens. But here's an interesting thing. There were 623 submissions for diagnosis, and out of the diseases that were listed here that I just read off to you, 392 of those ended up in chickens. In other words, 392 chickens. So better than half of those chickens, better than 60% for that matter, ended up having some sort of a disease issue. Therein lies the sword that can cut the lamb's throat here. It is showing to me, at least, that backyard chickens are a problem, and I think that in the long run, this kind of information can be used to promulgate more stricter and more constrictive policies as far as backyard chickens are concerned. And it's a tool that they're using that they say to get a handle on it, but I think the handle will come down at some point in time, and I may be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. But this was a big problem. From what I see, and I'm going over it here so everybody's aware of it. It will come as a surprise to anybody, and they'll be able to see what's going on here. It says here, many of the labs reported greater than normal positive diagnoses for Marek's disease that were marked by presence of both visceral and nerve lesions, visceral meaning on the liver, spleen, so on. And then it goes on to say, small flock owners obtain their flocks from a variety of sources, including small commercial hatcheries, feed stores, livestock auctions, swap meets from friends and neighbors, and home incubation of fertile eggs. Only hatcheries practice Marek's vaccination, and even that may not be a guarantee because the practice can be dependent on the hatchery size. And then again, it comes back in here and says, many backyard breeds are also fancy or of heritage types that are usually bred by fanciers who do not practice vaccination. It goes on and on and on, pointing out all these things that backyard flock holders don't do. I think they missed the boat on the fact that there are a lot of us that really do ante up and pay attention and do things. I mean, by the amount of emails that I get, by the amount of activity on my Facebook page, Andy's Facebook page, people that listen to this show, the seminars that you do, the attendance at your seminars, that kind of thing. Really, I think, a good portion of the people, I certainly can't say the majority because I don't have all the numbers, but a good portion of the people do their due diligence. I don't know, like anything else, people take care of their personal health. I don't know if you ever get them to take care of the chicken's health. My take on it is many people, certainly not all, look at chickens as being expendable. And I said it on the show before, you go to Tractor Supply, I don't know what they charge for a chick, but let's say it's $3 a piece, so you buy a half a dozen, you get $18 invested. On average, how much money are you going to spend to keep them alive beyond feed and water? I just don't know. So the state of California...
And of course, it depends on the level of the the hobbyist, obviously, you know. I mean, you know, Tractor Supply knows that. All the feed stores know that. If they can sell, you know, six chickens to one person that initial sale, then they'll come back and they'll have to buy a bag of feed every month. They may buy some treats. They'll buy a waterer. They'll buy a feed, you know. But the long run is going to be basically feed, of course, and then maybe some treats along the way. And then, again, could be some medicine here or there, treatment, syringes, things. But you know, we know that they can be a 12-year or longer commitment if they're healthy and taken care of. So yeah, that's, you know, they're carrying chicks every spring, and they want that 12-year customer.
Yeah. Now, I want to read this real quick because we're getting towards about 5-6 minutes here. This is from the state of California, which evidently has a real comprehensive look at their backyard poultry submissions through their lab information system that spanned 10 years from 2001 to 2011. So this is information here that is even better than the other one, because there are 3,178 diagnoses, and they were grouped under viral, bacterial, and parasitic. Okay. You know, management, non-infectious causes, neoplastic diseases, metabolic diseases, so on. So they give you here the top three, and this cuts to what we've been talking about. Viral, bacterial, and parasitic diseases were the top three diagnoses, with Marek's causing 67% of all the viral diseases. 67%. So if you take that 3,178 and multiply it out, you're going to find out that that's a lot of birds. E. coli infections were the highest for bacterial diseases, and this one shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. When I beat people over the head with this one for the last 50 years, coccidiosis was responsible for 35% of parasitic diseases. 35% that could have been prevented. E. coli a little bit harder to prevent, but not undoable. Marek, certainly the majority of that could have been mitigated out by vaccination. Then it goes on here to say management and non-infectious related diagnoses, yolk peritonitis, visceral gout, prolapse, et cetera, were only 11% of the total diagnoses. So, again, it's pointing to, you know, diseases more so than overall management. I mean, they looked at a lot of birds, almost 3,200 over that period of time. So I will go on here and just read their conclusion here, and people can take this for what they want. It says, even with a small sample of labs that responded to the survey, it was evident that parasitism, respiratory disease of various etiologies, Marek's disease, and mycoplasma infections are significant problems in backyard poultry. The surge in the number of people keeping backyard poultry is said to be due to several factors: grassroots campaigns to buy locally produced food, the belief that home-raised livestock lowers energy use and carbon emissions associated with transporting food, alternative to large commercial farms, issues of pollution, noise, etc., and the perception that backyard poultry have fewer disease problems. Backyard poultry owners need to be educated how to better care for and manage their flocks. They should be knowledgeable about diseases, vaccinations, and the risk of zoonotic diseases and food safety issues associated with salmonella, listeria, and campylobacter. The poultry industry and poultry veterinarians also have a role to play in providing correct information to small poultry farmers, who it seems are going to be part of poultry production for years to come. And that's the name of that tune. I thought it was good information. I thought it was worthy of being put out there. I wouldn't have done it. I think it again, cuts to the thing that I think you may see some more restrictive, you know, rules and regulations coming down the road at some point in time. I haven't heard anybody talk about it, but this certainly provides them with a ton of ammunition for doing so.
Right. And then when you add all the coop fires that I report on and the insurance companies that are having to pay $50,000 to repair a house because of a heat lamp and a chicken coop, that's just the most recent one yesterday, $50,000 in damage. We already know these companies will not insure a lot of people if they find out you have backyard pet chickens. Geico is one of them. We've had a radio show on this. We had a live person come on. They said, I was canceled. They said because of chickens, they never would come on that radio show. Geico wouldn't, and justify it. We never got a real reason why via email or talking back and forth with the Geico representative. But I'm telling folks, man, one of these days, it hasn't happened yet, at least in my experience traveling around, one of these days I'm going to go and try to help somebody get the laws changed in their town,
And lo and behold, one of these days it's going to be, here's 25 coop fires that happened in the last 3 months. Six of them, you know, caused $35,000 or more damage. They caught the neighbor's home on fire. They did property damage. This is not a safe venture, and we're not going to have this. That's just going to be one more excuse why not to allow backyard chickens. And
the thing is that, in many cases, the backyard enthusiast will be giving the ammunition to fight back with. And, it's just the way unfortunately, I see it the way it's going to end up being, very much more restrictive. Here in the state of Maryland, technically your flock has to be registered with them. You've got to pay a $35 fee. You've got to be blood tested every 3 months. If you move birds in and out of your flock, you got to retest more often, and all of it's expensive. And, there was somebody, I believe, on Facebook here a couple of days ago moaning and groaning about the same thing, about thinking of dropping that whole idea and just keeping the birds in the backyard. And that's what they want. And, that's my interpretation of it anyway. But the ammunition is certainly going to be there with surveys like this. And then, there's a couple of ways you could look at this. Will this force people then not to bring things to the laboratory? So, the government has to be careful what they do and how they do it. Years back here, if you remember, they tried that movement to microchip everything, if you remember.
Yeah,
that didn't fly, and of course...
Yeah, that was the NAIS, the National Animal Identification System, NAIS. Yeah,
and you still may see that at some point down the road, It may end up being a condition down the road. You just never know.
Yeah, a lot of people complained about that. I was one of them. We had them on the radio show, and we were adamantly against that. And they tried to come out with it again about 2 years ago, and they had it. They called it something else, but people were caught on real quick with that, and they haven't done anything since. But you're right. It's probably still sitting there waiting to rear its ugly head.
When the timing is right and they can use enough scare tactics and everything else, the avian influenza thing isn't going to go away anytime soon. It's all around the world, seeing it more and more in countries where it never has been before. It's one of those things.
Well, we had the first human death in North America, up in Canada, from avian influenza.
Yep. And, it's still an ongoing issue, to my knowledge, in Mexico, in Europe, places like Denmark. There's been outbreaks recently in Germany. Saudi Arabia is still battling theirs. We're helping them with money, believe it or not. All these different places over there are having the things. There's a school of thought now that maybe putting all the birds down is not a good idea, and because it hurts some of these people in these small places. So what they're going to end up doing is doing some sort of quarantine vaccination type thing, and God only knows where it'll go from there. So it may be one of those things where through vaccination be able to live with it, and we'll see where it goes. But it's so once that takes a foothold, they'll start pointing to all these things, and just like the lab director here, he gets it. He understands that he's a friend of the small flock holder here, but he also understands that major obligation is to the commercial poultry industry. And, years ago when I asked him, I said, what's the big deal? I said, he said, well, these people have the potential. And that's what they're hanging their hat on. You are a reservoir of, or you are a potential reservoir of a disease that could be extremely detrimental to the commercial poultry industry. Believe me, they're not as worried about mycoplasma being a problem with the commercial poultry industry and a backyard enthusiast. They're more interested in it being a reservoir for bronchitis, for laryngotracheitis, for avian influenza, for exotic Newcastle, that kind of thing. That's what they're worried about. They're not worried necessarily about the E. coli. They're worried about those kinds of things getting loose, in a commercial area, in widespread mortality.
Yep, interesting. Interesting information. With putting it in perspective and having the numbers to back it up, and I agree 100% with you, Peter. It's a timing issue, scare tactics, and something will happen, and they'll say, "Oh, we need to implement this," and
this is what we need to do, and because of this situation or because of this, to keep you safe. So, yep, I completely agree with that. And thank you very much for coming on. Interesting topic today, and we look forward to seeing you here next week on Monday. And are you going to the Poultry Congress?
I will be at the Congress. We'll leave here Thursday morning at butt crack of dawn, and we should be up there by you know, early evening, and usually set up a few things, drop the trailer in the building, and then go crash at the hotel and
okay.
Back into early.
Well, hey,
Friday.
let me know if Monday's going to be a no-go, because I know sometimes those shows can be totally exhausting, both mentally and physically. So if you need to not have a Monday show to recover, unload, unpack, you know, all that stuff, and just take some time for yourself, just email me, let me know. We can make that happen.
You will do my best to do it. You know, I enjoy doing it, and the more information we get out here, the better for everybody, and that's what the goal is. And I'm going to try to work harder and smarter this year, try to bring more pertinent information, the best information we can get from the best sources. That's the goal.
Sounds like a plan. All right, just let me know, and you have a safe trip, and hope it's a success, and we'll see you next week.
All right, Andy, thanks. I appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye, bud. All righty, that's going to wrap up another episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We hope you'll tune in, trying to think, tomorrow, probably Wednesday at 12 p.m., and I think it's another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. So I'll post that on Facebook and Twitter and all that and give you an update on who's going to be on. So we appreciate you tuning in. We hope you have a wonderful day. God bless everybody. Thank you.